So, okay, good morning, and welcome to the session EPV5 Performance Tuning and Optimization. So, obviously we're going to talk about these topics, but my question to you, how important is a good performance to you? I'm guessing by entering this show, entering this session, it is. So we're going to show you what a good performance looks like and how you can tune it. We're not going to sing and dance or do any tap dancing, so don't worry about that. But I'm interested by showing hands, how many of you are actually measuring performance in your environment? Okay, some of you are. So question for you, for example, how do you measure your performance?
Edge sight.
Okay. I saw some hands over there. Who was actually doing some performance measuring?
Well, we use edge sight as well as stopwatch recording.
Okay. So when we look at on the performance topic, as you may have heard, Microsoft recently announced the Hotfix 4, which was all about performance, and there was a lot of noise on Twitter as well, and I think that's the most important thing that was released. There was some performance guidance from EPV released by Microsoft. So some of the topics that are in that particular article, we will be covering in our session as well. However, we actually test it and see the actual performance impact of those configurations. So our goal is to bring you unbiased, independent information on EPV5 performance tuning best practices. So we don't work for Microsoft, we're independent, and we want to bring you the content that we have researched over the last, I think it's close to a year, three quarters of a year, to bring that to you. So we have the following agenda for you set out. We will start with a little introduction, who we are, what the project that we are doing looks like, and all the phases that it has run through. The tool that we are using in our setup to actually measure performance. And then we're going to go through a variety of scenarios around configuration, so to speak. So just to give you a heads up, we have carefully selected these topics for you. We know that there are many different configurations out there, and we want all of you to have at least some information on the particular configuration of your environment. So the top three topics are basically covering all deployment models because they're independent of the actual EPV configuration when it comes, for example, to infrastructure. The others are maybe more specific for hosted desktops environment like RDSH or VDI. And we also have some scenarios that are specific for publishing and streaming. So if you have that in your environment, we will be covering that as well. So we hope that you all get at least some good content out of this session. So by introducing myself, my name is Ment van der Plas. I've been an EPV MVP since 2009. I've spoken on various conferences, including last year's TechEd, for example, both nationally and internationally. And with me, I brought Ryan.
My name is Ryan Bijkerk. I'm a development manager at LogiVSign, and I'm actually one of the team members of Project VRC. So by raising hands, how many people actually know Project VRC? Okay, some hands. For the people who don't know, Project VRC is a joint venture by two big Dutch consulting companies, PQR and Login Consultants. It started in 2009, and it's independent and unbiased. What we do is we search for best practices related to hosted desktop environments. To actually measure that, we have the industry standard product LogiVSI to actually benchmark the environment that we have. So if you look at the journey, since 2009, we released a series of white papers. We're currently in phase 8 of EPV5, which will be also published in a white paper in the upcoming, a couple of months. So all these white papers contains best practices that can be used as a guidance for your own environment. This can be downloaded free from the website, and you only have to register for it. So how many of you actually know LogiVSI? Cool, okay, I like that. For the people who don't know, LogiVSI is the industry standard benchmarking product. And there are actually a couple of topics that we're focused on. At first is benchmarking. A lot of vendors is actually using this to benchmark their own products and like big companies like Cisco, but also VMware, Citrix, even Microsoft. And what they do with the results, they publish it in white papers, so actually people can use that. Another thing where you can use Login4Design for is capacity planning. If you have a new environment, you want to build it up from scratch, you want to verify if you have enough capacity for it to actually host the amount of users. Another thing is just load and stress testing. So if I load up my entire environment, is my complete environment still standing up after I put all the stress on it? And the most interesting topic for me is the change impact prediction. When you apply changes to your environment, do you still have the same capacity? And actually, that is what we do in this presentation. We applying changes, we're switching stuff, and we just verify if the capacity is still the same. So how Login4Design does it is just by simulating users, and you can actually see it here in the video. We just set up a couple of users, and the user actually will start using applications. It will read, it will watch videos, and by doing this, we generate load on the environment. So during this workload, we have a set of applications that are used. It contains Office, the Adobe Reader. We have actually FreeMind, which is a Java application. We have some Internet Explorer in there, some zips, and PDF printing. And for this specific presentation, of course, we virtualize a couple of those applications.
Yeah, so the interesting thing is, if you've seen that Office was included in that workload. So by raising hands, how many of you have actually virtualized Office in your environment? Okay, not that many. Okay. So over the years, there's been some discussion whether or not Office is a good candidate to virtualize, you know, given the amount of integration it has with several other applications, business applications, but also with the underlying operating system. And also, you could also debate whether or not, you know, that's a good candidate to dynamically publish, because it's quite a unique application if you look at it, at its characteristics. And we've had some discussion also with the product team whether or not to include this particular application in the user workload. And we decided to do it anyway because we like it for its characteristics. Sure, it's unique, and maybe it's a little bit extreme, but we can actually show you what an extreme application does in your publishing environment and how it behaves. And I'm sure that there are a line of business applications out there in your environment that have maybe a small set of these characteristics as well that can actually have the same impact on the user publishing. So that's why we include Office, and we also can show you what we can do with the tuning of not particularly Office, but how to tune an application that has, for example, a lot of those integration points. So as Ryan mentioned, Login4Design is the solution that we are using, and so how do you benchmark an environment? So basically what we do, if you picture yourself a train car, and you picture yourself a specific configuration of that train car where the seating is, for example, on the sides. We have a series of users that stand ready, and we start onboarding them onto the train, right? And we really push it beyond the limit of the capacity of the train. So when that saturation point is reached, it's not a pleasant commute at that time, right? And until the machine is saturated, then we know what the capacity of that particular train car with its configuration is. Then we change the configuration, we change the seating, and we do the test again. We use the same users, we use the same user workload. We push it again beyond its limit, and we find that same saturation point. And basically what we get from that is a configuration graph that shows you the capacity impact of that particular configuration. So in this example, we have configuration 1, which we indicate as 100%. And we know that the configuration 2 has less capacity. So there may be reasons why you want configuration 2 to be, you know, in your train car, in your environment, but be sure to know that there's a capacity impact for that particular configuration. And we not only have these types of graphs, we also have resource graphs, because obviously we did it actually with train cars, we did it with VDI environments, with a host, with on top a series of VDIs. And we actually have the resource information from that particular host during the load. So you will typically see some of these graphs where on the horizontal axis you will see the time of our actual test, which takes close to an hour. And in that hour, we onboard about 160 users. And on the vertical axis, you'll see, for example, the resource, in this case, the CPU utilization. But we also have, for example, network traffic. We also have disk I/O and those kind of metrics. So we can actually not only see the capacity impact, but we can also pretty sure say where the capacity impact is coming from. So that you can say, well, if I, for example, you know, choose a different CPU for that particular host, that has an impact on the capacity as well. Now, we decided we have hundreds of these graphs. We have seriously amount of tests that we've executed. We've decided to only show you the graphs where an actual difference was measured, right? Otherwise, it would be a death by graph PowerPoint presentation and will not be very interesting. And we will run way over our 75 minutes, by the way. So these are the graphs that are typically in our environment. The second thing I want to mention is our platform. So we have Sirius hardware. We have Cisco UCS environment with a Sirius storage environment underneath. VMware virtualization in our environment. So this is not your typical desktop behind the desk kind of configuration. This is some serious tests that we've conducted. In that environment, we have two separate, we have a focus on the test blades where the actual test takes place, and the infrastructure that is offering services to that test environment is outside of the test. So we want to get the test results as clear as possible. So our servers are running Windows Server 2008 R2. 64-bit, 4 gigs of MEM, and Windows 7 is installed on the client SourceSpec 1, 32-bit with 1 gig of MEM and 2 virtual CPUs. Well, you could also argue, you know, why didn't you go for 2012? Why didn't you go for Windows 8? Well, there are many variations, and we choose for this one also because we intend to compare, for example, to EPV4, and not all of those platforms are compatible with EPV4. Nevertheless, this may not be the typical hardware that you have in your environment, and this may also not be the configuration that are in your environment, and also not the configuration that you have in your environment. So it's very important to understand that this is an indication that we're showing you on this hardware. So the percentage should be fairly the same, maybe, but we always encourage you to do it in your own environment because you have, you know, other applications. Another thing to mention here is that based on the best practices that we've collected over Project VRC over the last years, we've optimized these images to the max. So these Windows 7 images are highly optimized. For example, search, because it's resource intensive, is disabled on this VM. Other things may be disabled in this environment as well. So we are showing you the most optimal configuration. In your environment, maybe the virus scanner has a huge impact on that particular capacity, also maybe in combination with EPV. We don't have, you know, all the different configurations right now. Because testing such an environment and such scale requires a lot of automation. So our tests are fully automated, so the whole workload is automated, but also the regeneration of the actual VMs are automated. The state is refreshed between each run, and we apply the law of the big numbers, the large numbers. So a single loop that we run of a workload doesn't count. You do 10 consecutive loops, and we take the average. So it's not like your one, you know, out of order kind of performance metric. Each test runs over 24 hours to do all that rebuilding and stuff. And we have, here it says, conducted over 50 tests, but we were actually on the way over. And I think it was more to 600 tests or something, because these are fairly the ones that we've actually put inside this PowerPoint presentation. So we show you the averages. So this is not your typical one-shot kind of, impact analysis. So closing up the introduction part, now let's look at the scenarios that we're going to cover. As I mentioned, there are various scenarios that we're going to cover, including, you know, stuff that's applicable to all deployment models. Some are specific for VDI. Some are specific for publishing and streaming. However, given the amount of configuration and alternatives that we have, we decided to take a particular configuration as our baseline. So what we did, unless stated otherwise, we are using our default baseline configuration, which includes user-based publishing, pre-added application into the image. We'll come to that a little bit later. We included shared content store. We chose HTTP as our primary protocol. Our packages were optimized for fault streaming, and we'll come to that in the package architecture section of the scenarios. And we installed all the applications into the primary virtual application directory. So we tried to follow as much as the best practices that were available by Microsoft as possible. And of course, all the alternative configurations we're going to go through afterwards. Okay, so unless stated otherwise, these are the default configurations.
So let's go to the first scenario, which is local cache. But the reason why we choose for the local caching area is because we think that is the best scenario compared to the locally installed applications. So this is the best performance you can actually get compared to the installed applications. So all the packages are locally cached, so they are pre-added to the image. The image is closed and distributed over the entire environment. So first we're going to look at the capacity based on the VSR max. And we're going to compare it to the locally installed applications. So if we look at APP v4.6, you can see that the impact when you install APP v4.6 is 8%, which I personally think is quite nice because, yeah, virtualization has an overhead, it's a layer between the actual VM and the applications. So, yeah, it makes sense that it has overhead. And I got a quick question for you guys. So how many people think that APP v5 should be better than 4.6? Okay. So if we look at the slide, we see, yeah, it's like Houston, we have a problem. There's something going on. 84% it's something is going on. So, but what? If we look at the CPU charts, you can actually see that even we actually waited 30 minutes for the machine to get idle, so all the machines, all the VMs got booted, the test started with 100% CPU utilization. So there's something going on within the VMs. We can also even see it within the disk writes. So there's a huge offset with APP v5, and there's a lot of activity within the VM. But what is going on? So after a lot of research and troubleshooting, we actually found out that .NET has an optimization service which caused the high load. The reason why we didn't solve it actually at APP v4.6 is because the dependency isn't there. For .NET 4 is not required for 4.6. So the optimization is actually making sure that the applications are more optimal, starting quicker. But yeah, it's running as a background thread, and actually it consumes a lot of resources to actually optimize the entire .NET. So to actually force the optimization, we founded a script, it's right there on the slides, which actually makes sure that the .NET optimization is forced and is running better.
By raising hands, how many of you have .NET 4 in your VDI environment? Okay, many. How many of you actually found that the optimization service was causing CPU overheads? There's a couple of people. So,
okay,
excellent.
So after the optimization, we see that the chart looks way better for APP v5. Still, we have an unexplainable peak at the beginning of the test. I have to say the peak is also for CPU, but also for disk, and it's come to it later. But it didn't influence the overall capacity numbers. So you look now that the chart is just rising as expected, and it's a bit higher than APP v4.6. So just like mentioned, the writes, the disk I/O, there are also two peaks in there for APP v4.6 and 5, and you see that the disk behavior is quite normal if you compare it to each other. So again, based the capacity on the VSR max for 4.6, there's nothing changed. There's still 8%, but when we have APP v5 with the optimization, we have 13% impact. And we can also explain that because APP v5 has more integration, and therefore it consumes more resources. If you go to the conclusion, application virtualization has an impact. Makes sense. It's a layer between the VM and or the Windows machine and your application. Because APP v5 has more integration points, it's slightly a bit heavier. Within the results, we have still the unexplainable peaks. It's in CPU and in I/O, And it's within all the tests. So all the other scenarios also contains this, yeah, the unexplainable peaks. But they didn't influence the overall capacity number. So our recommendation is to, this is, yeah, even when you're not using actually AppV, is to optimize your .NET in a hosted desktop environment. Because that is a huge difference in your overall performance.
Yeah, so next topic is registry staging. How many of you are aware of what registry staging actually is? Thank you very much. Okay, some of you. So registry staging is a process that actually is part of the overall publishing process. So one part is actually delivering the metadata of the application through the actual client. Part of that process is also extracting the virtual registry, into the native registry of the machine, including opacity configuration and those kind of things. It runs as a background thread during the publishing process, and it may consume some CPU overhead. You can delay it. You can say, well, I don't want that part of the registry, I don't want that part of the application being done at publishing time, but at actual application start. And that makes sense, for example, if you have a lot of applications, and you do not always use them, right, in your environment. So specifically in non-persistent VDI environments where the machine state is basically dropped after each run. So there's a good blog post by Stephen Thomas. I don't know if he's in the room, but he wrote an excellent article on registry staging and how to enable registry staging or delay that registry staging. So we thought it was interesting, based on the local cache scenario, to see whether or not registry staging has any impact on the capacity or on the other performance items. So we see that if we have a local cache scenario, let's say that is 100%, we see that if you disable registry staging, so no background registry staging, it has a small capacity impact on the machines. It's not much, so the trade-off is obviously you delay that particular application to the application start. But in our configuration, we only have 4 virtual applications, and all of them are started. So we're going to hit that part anyway. So that's why you see a small trade-off. So it's a trade-off between user experience on one hand and performance impact on the other. And we also see that if you compare it to streaming will be covered in a later scenario specifically, you also see that the trade-off is there is a little bit higher. The capacity impact if you do registry staging with streaming, it's a little bit higher. It has a small negative impact on CPU. You see that the general chart of the disabled background registry staging is a little higher. But it has a positive impact on write, specifically in the streaming scenarios. So wrapping up the registry staging, we see that disabling registry staging has a small negative impact on CPU capacity, but there may be other reasons to implement it anyway. It has, for example, a positive impact on write I/O, which is expensive in VDI, especially in a streaming scenario we see that. And we could not confirm the performance improvements in our setup because, well, on one hand, we only have 4 applications and all of them were started, so it's not a real good, let's say, to judge any conclusion, base any conclusion on that. So Microsoft recommends to disable registry staging in VDI environments for performance reasons. Be sure to know if you do that, it has a small trade-off in capacity, and performance improvements are more likely to be seen in an environment with more applications, probably most likely in your production environments.
So going to the next topic, shared content store. So, bro, raising hands, how many of you know what shared content store is?
Okay, quite a few.
So for the people who don't know what shared content store is, when you have traditional streaming, an application will be streamed to the actual machine, and it will be cached locally. The AppV package will be written on the disk. When using shared content store, it's still streamed to the actual machine, but it's not written on the disk. It will get the parts of the package from the actual streaming share that is used. This is specifically for the hosted desktop environments. It should have an improvement in the IOs.
Of the hosted desktop environment.
Yeah,
yes.
Especially. So if you look over the overall capacity, we compare it now to the local cache scenario, And if you do streaming with shared content store ads, it has 14% impact. So the traditional way, how many people think that the default way of streaming, so that the application is cached locally within the VM, is better than shared content store? Nobody.
Nobody.
Oh, one. Yes.
One. Okay. He's not right.
Yes.
So the traditional way of streaming, what we saw is that it has a 30% impact. If we look at the actual disk reads, we see a small difference in the I/O for the shared content store scenario. But the most interesting part is the actual writes, because there's a huge, huge offset in the traditional way of streaming. And we can also clarify that, because the application is stored locally in the machine. When using shared content store, it's not stored locally in the machine, but used from the actual share. It is possible, because we're running in a stateless environment. There may be benefits when you have stateful environment, so the application stays cached. We didn't test that in our setup. So if you look at the CPU, it's interesting to see that the actual CPU of the traditional way of streaming even didn't hit the 100% utilization. And that's because we blew over the storage system, and all the VMs didn't respond anymore, and they got actually stuck.
It's interesting to see, because normally I think almost every VRC scenario that we test almost always hits CPU as a maximum capacity, hardly ever a disk maximum capacity.
Yeah, actually, before all the other phases on this, the hardware set that we have, we never hit the actual limit of our storage system. If you look at the throughput at the actual streaming server, we can also see that there is an improvement going over the network. So when you enable shared content store, less more amount of throughput is used. It's again, when using a stateful environment, this can be different, but we didn't test that, so we're not sure.
Because the life cycle, obviously, of a stateful machine, including a laptop, but also the VDI, stateful VDIs, it has this initial hit of dragging down that information, but it carries that information around for the rest of the life cycle of that particular VM. So it's more likely if you would say, the chart, what happens in the next 3 years of that VM running, it's most likely to see a smaller number of network throughput. But on the other hand, it's also good to have, if you implement, for example, shared content store, you know exactly what the hit on your network streaming server will be. It will never exceed it, because it's traditional regular behavior. So it's always below.
So the conclusion, streaming has a fair amount of impact on the resources, so on CPU and therefore the overall capacity. When the traditional way of streaming has a huge impact on writes.io. When enabling shared content store, you can drastically lower the amount of IOs. And shared content store also reduce the network traffic of your streaming server. So Microsoft recommends actually to use shared content store in the hosted desktop scenarios for performance reasons. And based on our results, we actually confirmed that. We see that the huge performance improvement in the I/O. Just like also mentioned, in a stateful environment or persistent, the benefits in the long run maybe be different, but we didn't actually test that.
Yeah, and so I just one comment on the shared content store as well. It's implemented on the client, basically, so it doesn't have any additional management overhead, for example. You can use the configuration in the same way as you've always done, but you just can say a certain amount of clients have shared content store enabled, while other clients do not have shared content store enabled. So you really get that benefit without any trade-offs in management. So next up is publishing. I'm interested to see how many are actually using a AppV4 infrastructure with publishing. Okay, some of you. So when we start talking about publishing, it's Yeah, it's a very, let's say, emotional kind of topic. There's no real, you know, what's a good publishing performance? So we were really struggling when you look at publishing times, you know, what publishing times are good. If you, for example, look at a laptop configuration and you do dynamic publishing, you deliver that laptop to that user, he logs on, he gets that initial, you know, maybe minute or 30 seconds or whatever to publish his applications, and after that, the applications are there and basically you can use it. So it's a very, you see that publishing is specifically in a non-persistent VDI environment is a huge, you know, is a huge, needs to be very fast, let's put it that way, right? Because that user logs onto that particular machine every day and he needs to be refreshed every day. So one of the cool things that Ryan actually did for our research is actually created a script that pulls that publishing data from the machines that we are running on. So how many of you are actually measuring publishing performance? Okay. So how are you publishing? How are you measuring it? Okay. So the user logon script. Okay. It makes sense. So what we do, we basically pull the event viewer information from all the VMs, and we compare the publishing events there. So that's where we base our graphs on. So let me ask you another question. How many of you, what would be a good performing publishing? Let's say if publishing took 5 minutes, how many of you think 5 minutes is good? Okay, so 3 minutes? 2 minutes? Am I going to end up at zero or one? Okay, this doesn't make sense. So less than a minute? Less than a minute is pretty good. Okay. So we have four applications in our environment, right? Adobe Flash, Adobe Reader, FreeMind, and Office. And there are a couple of things you can see from this chart. So this is the information we got when the machine was not under load. So this was basically the first user logon, and it took 32 seconds to publish these applications. So there are a couple of things you see here. There's one application dominating this publishing refresh pretty much, which is Office, right? So there's a reason for that, and we'll come back to that a little bit later. So it makes sense to get a good understanding if you talk about publishing performance and if it's important to you to actually know which applications are good performing and which applications are bad performing. And I'm going to let good and bad be decided to you in your environment. So I'm not saying that 24 is bad. Maybe it's very good for the given the amount of information that Office has to register. Another thing is interesting is we noticed that first application always took like 6 seconds, which was relatively large compared to, for example, the Adobe Reader and the FreeMind, also given by the fact that our Adobe Flash package was actually the smallest package we had in the environment, not a lot of integration. So we think that the first application, you know, gets this, you know, maybe this initial hit of, I don't know, security things or services that need to start up. So we always noticed that 6 seconds was at the first application. So it's important to get a good understanding of the applications in your environment. And then we start talking and discussing, also with the team and amongst us, is what are the options that you can do to actually optimize your publishing performance? So you give me a shout. What do you think? What would you do if you want to optimize publishing? Sorry? Global publishing is an interesting one. We have that in the slide. Anything else? Nobody?
Nothing.
Okay, so we came up with a couple of ones. So we thought pre-adding applications would be an interesting one. So not publishing the actual information, but already delivering the data of that application, the metadata, not the mount, not the entire package, but just the metadata, pre-configured into the into the image. We thought that removing a particular office, a particular application, in our case Office, from the publishing and putting that in the image, still is a virtualized application or not, you can debate on that. Removing that, does that help the performance? We also thought about, if you look at the what we think is very is causing a significant performance overhead, is for example the integration points that Office has. And you can tweak them actually in the manifest XML pretty good. You can disable certain sections of the manifest of the application characteristics, so to speak, and see if that has any, you know, optimization there. So what we did, we disabled, for example, COM. That's a lot of data in the Office package. And we'll see how that influenced publishing performance. We also did global publishing, including pre-added applications. And we also did global publishing, including pre-added and pre-published applications. So how many of you, let's do a quiz. User pre-edit, higher or lower than user not pre-edit? Higher? Takes more time or less time? Less? Okay. We saw that it did take less time, but a very little amount of time less. So we see only 1%, and 1% is like, okay, that's not really a lot. We wouldn't say that this is then definitely something you can optimize. And this really struck us. We were thinking, and also because pre-adding application is part of the prescriptive guidance from Microsoft Performance, and it makes sense to actually put that information on the machine because the data is already there. We just saw that if you measure it the way we measure it in the event viewer, we didn't see that time get reduced. So I don't know what is happening there, but we didn't see that difference. So putting Office in the image, less time, more time, and everybody else is inconclusive. Okay, yeah, that definitely helps, of course, because you eliminate that 24 seconds from the publishing time. But it may not always, you know, make sense to put all the applications that are intense into your image, right? Because it's also the flexibility that you want to deliver. So then we started disabling certain components in Office, in our case, COM. How many of you think it took less time to publish? Okay, how many of you think more time? More time. It actually was less. So it's a definite improvement to disable those kind of configurations. And we have the actual numbers in the next slide, so don't worry about that. But I think if you based on this, you would say that disabling those integration points that by default get captured in the sequencer, if you do not use them, for example, on your client or in your application, makes sense to disable them. They may be for those, you know, heavy applications. Let me get to global publishing. How many of you think global publishing takes less time? How many of you think more time? Okay. We were flabbergasted by this one as well. It actually took more time. It takes more time to do an actual global publish than a user publish. And we've been, you know, going through this, and we were wondering why this is happening. And it might be because that, you know, writing to the HQ local machine or the machine part of the OS is maybe heavier than user publishing. But we haven't figured this out. And if you continue to go to pre-publish, it even makes less sense because if you have pre-added, pre-published applications, basically all the data should be there. And still, it took more time to actually do the publishing. So there are some strange things going on in this particular scenario. So here you have the actual results. So 32 seconds was our baseline, and we ended up with 40 on the max on the global publishing. So if you put that in the resource charts that you've seen earlier, you see that publishing is definitely CPU intensive. You see that all the publishing charts are pretty much on the same line, except for the without the Office. And that makes sense because there's less integration points to publish, so there's also less CPU cycles. We see that user publishing generally is faster than global publishing. But more importantly, it increases under load. And that's what you clearly see in this particular picture. We start up around 32 seconds in the beginning of the set, and at the maximum, for user publishing, we hit 150 seconds. So user publishing, because of the CPU intensity, it is a process that is very likely to increase under load. So be sure that if publishing is important in your environment, to not only do your tests on a clean machine and see how that performs, because it may double once the actual users are on that machine. It pays to optimize your sequencing. Here you see, for example, the package where we put Office in the image. You see that the publishing time not only is much lower, it also it's much stable also under load. But the same goes for the one that where we disabled the COM objects, the particular integration points of Office. You see that although it raises a little bit in the end, it's not as much as the traditional publishing chart. So wrapping up publishing, we see that the impact of publishing is primarily on CPU, not so much on disk. We see that applications with a lot of integration, and in our case that was Office, so we were happy that we included Office in our test run, but there may be applications in your environment that have a lot of integration points as well. They have a huge impact on the publishing time, which will increase heavily when the machine is under load, And we generally see that user publishing is faster than global publishing. So from a recommendation perspective, Microsoft adds recommends to pre-add those applications for best performance. And you know that makes sense because you deliver already data that is there. However, in our test setup, and that may be caused by the way that we test, for example, the non-persistent VDI or anything else, we cannot confirm that there's any gain, but we can confirm that there's no negative impact. So you could still use that that pre-adding, and maybe in your environment, you can see that it actually makes sense to do. And you really should consider, you know, disabling certain integration points because APP v5 has more, you know, ways to integrate with the local operating system. So it makes sense to disable them if not required. As I said, they're by default captured by the sequencer, so they're always applied, giving you the, you know, as much functionality as the native app would bring you. But there's a trade-off in publishing times. So,
next topic: streaming. So what we actually meant with streaming is the actual protocol that is used in streaming. So you actually here have two options. You have the HTTP streaming and SMB streaming. So I'm a bit curious, so how many people are actually using HTTP streaming? Okay.
Okay, a couple of.
And SMB streaming? Okay, interesting. If we look at the overall capacity, we again compare it to the local cache scenario. We already know that streaming has an impact on capacity, and when we look at the HTTP, it's 15%. So, how many of you think actually that SMB streaming is better than HTTP?
Okay, quite a few.
Quite a few. Okay. And how many of you think for worst?
Nobody.
One. Okay. So if we look at the overall capacity, you see that it's actually better with the SMB protocol. It's 7%. And initially we thought, okay, HTTP should be better. But we're, yeah, quite flabbergasted by it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually implemented some customers, you know, based on HTTP because I was under the impression that that would be the more performing protocol. And this clearly shows that, well, basically I was wrong.
Yeah. So if you look at the CPU utilization, you can clearly see that the SMB is lower than the HTTP streaming, which is beneficial, of course, of the overall capacity. If you look at the disk behavior, it's quite similar. There's no big difference in there. If you look at the publishing times, and then I thought it was very interesting. You can see that the publishing time of SMB is faster than HTTP, which is beneficial. And you can also see that in the end is growing less compared to the HTTP. So to the conclusion, the streaming protocol, of course, have a large impact on the capacity and publishing times because you have to stream the application. And the SMB protocol is faster than the HTTP protocol. And the big difference is related to the CPU because disk is quite the same. So for our recommendation, we say, okay, if you have performance, for performance reasons, just use SMB. But yeah, in other scenarios like network boundaries, you should consider, of course, also HTTP because SMB is harder to manage outside of your network. We have one important note here, because we tested on Windows 2008, which is SMB2. And so we didn't test it with SMB3. And maybe there is even a better performance or a better publishing time in when using SMB3.
So next topics are what we call the package architectures, so to speak. How many of you are actually packaging in your environment? Okay, quite a few. So there are several variations that you can do while building your package, right? So there's the ones that we've come up with are whether or not you should do network optimization, so going for that feature block technology, feature block 1, feature block 2, or going towards fault streaming, which is new in APP v5. How many of you know fault streaming? Okay. So fault streaming is a new methodology. Instead of actually building that feature block, it basically reaches out to the actual package and grabs the stuff. So it's not optimized in any way. It just basically grabs its, the files it needs from the package where it's located. So the network optimization is one part. Another thing that has been also a discussion, I think, for years is what the performance impact of installing either to the primary virtual application directory or into the virtual file system is. So best practice is install to the primary virtual application directory for performance reasons. So let's see what those performance reasons or performance impact is. And we thought it's also interesting to look at a migrated application. Why? Well, maybe a migrated application behaves, you know, more bad or is better. So it was an interesting scenario because a lot of people are migrating towards the platform. So let's see those scenarios. So the first one is the non-virtual file system package. So it's the one that installs into the primary virtual application directory during the sequencing. So most of the application files are located into the primary virtual application directory, and the stuff that's installed outside of the directory ends up in the virtual file system. Then we have an identical package, and we've installed everything into the virtual file system. So the primary virtual application directories is empty. So that should be the you know, from a performance perspective, a less performing package. So by raising hands, how many of you think the virtual file system package was offers less capacity? Okay. How many of you think more? Okay. Equal. Okay. So interesting. We saw that it doesn't really. I mean, it says 1% here, but I want to ignore that particular one because it's so close to the 100%. We did not see any capacity impact by using either a non-virtual file system package or a virtual file system package. And that's an interesting concept because we've been debating this, I think, for years already in FV4, and I think even before in the SoftGrid era, on whether or not this actual performance impact has ever been measured. So that's why we measured it. So what you clearly see, there are reasons why you want to install into the virtual file system. One of them, for example, being if you use connection groups and you want those virtual file system being merged into two separate packages, you have to use installation into the primary virtual file to the virtual file system. So if you want to, do that, it's good to know that it doesn't have any capacity impact. Now, a migrated application. Do you think a migrated application has less capacity? More capacity? Okay. It actually has more capacity. You have more capacity if you have migrated applications. Who knows why this is happening? Anybody? Come on, you're packagers. You know this. You know this better than me. Okay, let me tell you what we think. During the migration process, if you convert the packages, only the actual data of the package gets transferred, right, to the files and the registry. So what doesn't get transferred? Integration points that are new in FV5. So these are packages that do not have those integration points. And we know now that, given the past slides that we have, integration points are heavy, CPU heavy. So these applications do not offer any integration points. So that's why we think it has an increased capacity. Now, don't get me wrong. I do not think it's a best practice to sequence on 4.6 and then migrate all your applications to 5.0 just for capacity reasons. But it's good to know that at least it doesn't have any negative impact if you have used those migrated packages. So then, the feature block one versus default. So Microsoft, in the prescriptive guidance, said that fault streaming should be the best, a fault package should be the best performing package. So what we did, we created a package that was built on fault streaming, and we created a package that was optimized for feature block. And we actually saw that, again, this is a very small number, that feature block was, it says here slightly, but I want to call them identical to fault streaming. So we didn't see, from a capacity impact, any difference between a fault stream package and a feature block package. And you can see that here in the chart. So there was no noticeable difference in CPU. There was a small write I/O offset for the non-virtual file system package, but very small. And the fault package also has a small write I/O offset. It's a little bit more I/O heavy, but very, very small. So wrapping up the package architecture section, we think the package architecture, what we've measured, does not have any real noticeable difference in capacity, in CPU, or in publishing times, and a very small offsetting write I/O. And we already know from earlier slides that integration points will reduce the CPU, and the right IOs, and therefore we think the migrated packages are performing, have a increased capacity. So for performance reasons, Microsoft recommends to use fault streamed and primary virtual application directory installed packages. Again, we cannot confirm that there's a performance gain. We can confirm that there's no performance decrease. So we think you should apply this in the way where you say, okay, I choose a default configuration, and whenever I see needed, for example, in that connection group scenario that I just described, that I, you know, alter from that particular scenario and I either install into the virtual file system or into the to the PVAT. So again, like we already said, for performance reasons in publishing, you should disable the integration points that are not really you know, relevant for your application package for best performing.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Hotfix 4. How many of you actually installed Hotfix 4 in your environment? Okay, nice. So the focus of Hotfix 4 was performance, and particularly the performance in publishing time, application startups, and things like that. If we're looking at the capacity, we can say there's no difference in the overall capacity impact when you install Hotfix 4, which is good. So you will not gain the overall capacity of your environment, but you'll also not lose it. But of course, the focus was on publishing performance. And if you look at this chart, and I have to say that we removed, in this specific scenario, Office from the image, we installed locally. But we still can see that the impact of the Hotfix 4 is it's way better than compared to SP2.
Yeah, and I think the reason to mention, the reason why we installed Office locally, because if we would include Office in that, still in the publishing, we already saw that Office dominates that that publishing time, right? Of the 32 seconds that we had, 24 were of Office. And there was no, I mean, and that was primarily caused by the amount of integration points. And there was no, there's no performance gain in integration points. It just has to happen, right? It has to write that stuff to the actual operating system. So what we saw is that that gain for that particular application, it was dominating that the publishing time so much that we decided to take it out to actually see the performance gain in the publishing performance.
So another thing that is very interesting in this specific chart is that the Hotfix 4 publishing time are not increasing as heavily as compared to SP2. So when your system is more on the load, the publishing time will not increase drastically like SP2, which is a good thing. So if you look actually at the publishing time percentage and compare it to SP2, you will gain 38% in publishing time, which is a lot. But we think, and we're not 100% sure, but it will be more if you have more applications.
Yeah.
So of course, depending on your environment. So the Hotfix 4 does not have an impact on the overall capacity, so you will not gain or lose capacity in your environment. And the primary focus was the publishing performance. And we can actually see big improvements in your publishing times. So we really recommend to install the Hotfix 4 in any publishing scenario, because it is a huge improvement.
So that basically wraps up the scenarios that we want to cover, that we want to run by you. So if we wrap it up into conclusions before we go into Q&A, we'd say that regardless of FP5, it's actually a good idea to look at that .NET performance thing, that optimization thing, to specifically in hosted desktop environments to optimize that process into the image. Otherwise, your first user logon will have heavy CPU on the at the start. So we strongly encourage you to use the shared content store, not only for its manageability reasons, but also for the reduced disk I/O and network traffic that is occurring. And we think that application with integration points, in our example, that was Office, but I'm pretty sure in your line of business, in your environment, certain line of business applications have similar characteristics. They are CPU heavy, so you can disable them for optimal publishing performance. In streaming scenarios, we see that the SMB protocol is the faster protocol. There may be reasons to still choose HTTP, but from a performance perspective, we think SMB is the protocol of choice. And we haven't found any proof of the package architecture having any relevant impact in capacity or resources. So feel free to you know, play around with those different configuration to whatever fits your need. There's no real benefit or downside to that. And definitely use Hotfix 4 in any publishing scenario. So when it comes to the biggest recommendation that we can give is that we test this, you know, in our environment with our workload, with our applications. So we definitely recommend you to do the same testing in your environment. I've seen some of the people from Lung and VSI in the back, so be sure to step up to them or either in the booth to see how the product works and get some free licenses so that you can test it for yourself, so that you can say, okay, I actually love a good performance. So with that, I want to wrap up the session, and I want to open it for Q&A, and thank you for your attention. Yeah, question.
So do you have any plans in the near term on testing your performance with the Office 2013? Because I know one of the things Microsoft is touting is basically full integration, Office 2013 with AppV, and based on the performance hits you were seeing on the 2010. Now, 2010 is being different because it's got the deployment kit and all that stuff that goes along. Do y'all have that in the works anytime soon?
We didn't have Office 2013 in the workload at this moment. I don't think we're going to cover it in the white paper now, but it may be part of the next phase. I do encourage you to step up. There's some Microsoft folks over here. If you have any particular concerns around performance, you can step up to these people to actually give your feedback.
Okay, thank you.
Right, thanks. Anybody else?
Has there been any discussion on increasing the scope of the workload for integration of CM12?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
So has there been any discussion about integrating AppV5 into CM12 and publishing it through CM12?
So the question is, has there been any discussion on integrating the publishing part of AppV4 infrastructure into the CM12 product?
Yeah, not having a separate infrastructure, but actually using CM12 publish.
Okay, so you can use, obviously, CM12 for delivering virtual applications, AppV applications. I think the feature parity between the two are coming, very close together. Publishing is not part of the CM12 product. I haven't heard any discussions that it's going to be, but definitely, check with the Microsoft folks if they have any plans on moving towards that. I don't know.
Yes. In reference to the .NET optimization process, were you running that specifically against the operating system, or did you also run that as part of the sequencing process?
No. We only did it actually within the operating system where you're actually targeting that. Yeah.
Yeah, we basically just installed it and let it do its thing. That's where we got it from. All right, in front. Yeah, that's a challenge. Okay, so my recommendation would be to actually test that in your environment to see whether or not you can get the environment to deliver them quick enough, because I cannot judge how long that time frame can be before that application gets installed. So the same similar discussion for publishing. So sure, you can do it, and you have to decide for yourself if the time that it takes from the new pulled VDI for the application to be delivered, if that's quick enough for you in that particular situation.
What was the question?
We never could get it fast enough for us. We didn't have the SSCM and the stateless.
Okay. Sorry, the question was whether or not if this gentleman was going to move towards pooled VDI, if CM 2012 was fast enough to deliver those applications into that that golden image during the initial user logon. Are they ready? You were ready?
We had the same problem, which is we never could get it fast enough. Even though we wanted to use that shared infrastructure for our stateless environment, we just it was too long waiting for apps to publish.
And what was too long? What was the time frame?
Waiting for the app. What was too long?
Yeah.
We were seeing 5 to 10 minutes for a handful of apps.
Okay.
Because of all the policies that have to run from SSCM to get to publishing.
Yeah, I think there's some optimization that you can do, but I'm not sure. I mean, we're talking already, we're publishing within the 30-second time frame, and I saw hands raising that was too slow. So if you compare it to that, I mean, then these typical time frames.
That's what we were saying. We were saying we've got to be at least 1 to 2 minutes. I mean,
yeah.
It's not going to...
Especially in the pooled VDI environment, that's what
and
we see.
Specifically what we're looking at.
Yeah. All right, good question. Thank you. Anybody else? We have plenty of time left, so... Nobody? So the question is, what's our next test case for VSI? So what for Project VRC? What we're going to do is we're going to wrap this one up into a white paper and release that. Because what we learned, we started the first test, I think, in November. And basically, we are doing all this in a free time. So as the longer you take, the more configuration changes you will get. And you have to retest and do the hotfix for and everything. So we're going to wrap it up and put it out. And maybe in a later stage, we'll do some additional testing. I don't know if Project VRC has any other plans on doing, you know, load testing. You know?
Currently not, no.
Okay.
So. Will this slide deck be available on TechEd?
Yes, of course, yes. So the question is, if you want to pre-add applications, where do you set that? How do you do that? So basically what you do is you open up your if you're building your golden image, you basically run the command, add appv client package, add appv package, that particular PowerShell command, where you basically only add the application to the image. So the stages the application is in is first it gets added, then it gets published, and then it gets mounted. That's the order of the application. In this case, you only add it. And then what it does, it basically the metadata information of that particular application already travels into the client, into that appv directory. And there it sits, and then once the publishing kicks in, the data is already there, so that stuff doesn't have to travel towards the client. That's the idea. And if you do it in a global publishing way, basically that process is pretty much the same, but then you can also... So the question is, does that have any issues with versioning? Actually, it doesn't, because once the client image gets live and there's an updated version on the FV management server, it will get that part just on top of the old one. I mean, sure, you hit that publishing then, but in a life cycle, it doesn't give you any, you know, every once in a while, you should wrap those up into your golden image, of course. But, that should work pretty fine. Yes, sir.
So this was the first time I heard about the SMB, using SMB as the protocol, because I use HTTPS for the clients. Feedback. I'll just stand back here. So from the clients, you would just configure it to use SMB instead of HTTP?
Are you using a full infrastructure, native infrastructure?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, there are two ways to actually do that. So either when you add the packages to the FV management console, you add those packages from a UNC path instead of an HTTP source or HTTPS source. Then that particular server gets populated down to the client. And if you have a distributed environment, you basically can set the FV package route to overrule that particular configuration. So you can set the FV package route to /whatever server/whatever share, and it will replace that in the delivered publishing XML towards the client.
Okay, so from the client to the publishing server uses SMB instead of HTTP?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the idea. So it's replacing the SMB protocol that particular phase. Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
So just a comment rather than a question. We also have the UEV template available now, just for everyone's benefit, that will roam that publishing state as well. So previous logons after the first one, the published state will roam with the user as well. That will help that publish time to be even quicker with subsequent logons into that VDI environment as well. So I thought I'd just highlight that. And that's part of that performance guideline link that Ment talked about.
Yeah, that's actually a good comment to me. Is that we are only testing the first logon. We don't, our workload doesn't have any second logons or stuff like that. So this particular, if you have a user environment management solution or a user state management solution, like UAV, you basically can already pre-populate that user state for the publishing to be even quicker. And you guys have the template already available. Okay, excellent.
We found that part of the publishing time has to do with the reintegration of the extension points when the user logs in, especially in like a shared pooled VDI scenario.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you guys have done any testing at all doing the new preserve user integrations on login setting to speed up the publishing time, because it, I think it gets around the reintegration of the icons.
Yeah, so I think that's part of what Tamim actually mentioned. So if you have that preserve user state part, that's actually to save that state and don't get that republished every user logon. Mm-hmm. And if you have another an additional solution, a user state solution that can actually pre-populate that information with that key, the publishing time will increase will be lower. So you have faster publishing because all that information is then respected on the client.
Okay. Do we have to? Because right now, in order to make all that work, because we use Citrix for the profile management,
yeah.
We exclude the catalog from being copied into the user's profile, because if it remains there, then you get all kinds of weird icon issues. So do we have to re-include that catalog if we preserve user integrations? Is it? Okay.
And I think there's some general guidance in the document as well, which directories you should include and exclude if you have another profile management solution, right? That's in the guidance as well. So the question is, does this require hotfix 4? Yeah, yes it does. Yes, yeah, for that key. Okay, yeah, okay, no, the requirements haven't changed. All right, anybody else? Okay, then let's wrap up the session. If you have any other questions, you will find us around the conference. So thank you for your attention.